The following is a presentation of the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence and WCWP. Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Welcome back. You're listening to Project Independence and You. I'm John Ryan, and I'm here with Otto this morning. And our next speaker is Nicolette Pace. Nicolette is a New York nutritionist and lifestyle expert. She is a radio show host, and her practice, Nutrisource, is located in Great Neck. And it looks, I mean, I've gone through some of the stuff. It looks tremendous. Hello, Nicolette.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming out on this cold morning.
Unbelievable. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to yourself. Tell us about Nutrisource. Let's start it that way.
Well, we do medical nutrition therapy and lifestyle counseling. Basically, there are many, many dietary and lifestyle interventions that are sought after when you have a variety of medical conditions. And some of the more popular ones are what is affecting the nation today, whether it be diabetes or kidney disease or suffering from weight problems. We really handle it. And this goes for a wide range of ages, from pediatrics all the way up to geriatrics. So I have extensive experience. My God, I've been practicing well over 20 years at this point, not to give away my age, of course.
Medical nutrition therapy.
Right. So we integrate. We integrate, you know, Western medicine into alternative medicine. So it is really at the crux of that. Everything's coordinated with your medical care, regular physician visits, and medicines that are on, combined with either vitamins or herbal supplements, and you know how you eat, how you live, some of the things that are really impacting how you take care of you.
Okay. Is it? Somebody would come to you then and be on three pills, whatever they happen to be, three prescriptions for a particular ailment. Then you would sit down and say, okay, with these pills, you shouldn't be eating apples, you should have oranges?
It could be. But frankly, something like that is almost handled by a pharmacist, where you would look at something like that. Mostly we do a partnership with a person because something is driving them to attend the visit. And looking at what is the most problematic thing of why they're there. Not what the spouse feels is problematic, but what that person themselves feel is problematic. In other words, look, my doc's concerned that my cholesterol is high, and I'll ask the patient, well, what really is bothering you? And they'll say, honestly, nothing really. The only thing that's bothering me is my wife telling me I need to lose some weight. So this is where we go from there. And then when you get to the root of it.
So then you get him a piece of tape for his wife's mouth? I mean, that's easy enough.
We've definitely had couple sessions. And actually, spouses have been.
As a marriage counselor.
You have to wear many, many hats. But you may find out in delving deep that, there are some underlying things that are bothersome. Nobody wants to be limited. And certainly nobody wants to be told or reminded of their mortality. So these are usually what gets a person to start promoting and propelling themselves towards change. And ultimately, we get to the root of what's driving us, which is the habits.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's what we're going to kind of talk about today. Okay. Very, very deep topic.
That kind of jives with something I was thinking about, which is unless somebody wants to do something themselves, it probably isn't going to happen. And I'll give you a little story. My cousin and I, about a month ago, walked the High Line in New York.
Yeah,
I know. We walked back and forth. We did the High Line.
The full thing?
Yeah.
Wow.
We went back and forth. And then we went to a place to have lunch after that. And we end up in this place and ordered, which is probably not on your menu, but two corned beef sandwiches. And they arrive at the table. And all of a sudden, my cousin's head goes down on the table. Luckily, he was sitting, and we're in the middle of this pub place, and he's down, all right? So now, half an hour later, we end up in Lenox Hill Hospital. Long story short, where I'm going with this is that a cardiologist was involved and asked him, because he's a smoker, asked him if he wanted to stop smoking. And he thought about it. And he actually thought about it for a minute without saying anything. And he ended up saying no. So the doctor said, and I agree with him 1,000%, he said, unless you want to stop, it's just not going to happen. But he came right out and said no. So the point being that that's a very hard habit, apparently. Luckily for me, I never smoked.
Right, okay.
But, if you're a smoker, that's a hard habit to break.
Well, I think that's very honest.
But that leads in, it is honest.
It also it also strikes at the root of why we do things, even when we want to change them. Ultimately, this is the change conundrum we're in. There are benefits to not changing, and your friend identified those. I mean, I was glad he took a minute to actually think about it and answer properly. As bad as we know smoking to be, there's still pleasure and satisfaction in smoking, and that's why people smoke.
Right.
You know, you've got to be honest, and there's no way if you have not got to the turning point. Ultimately, people put things off and procrastinate. But some of the guidelines for changing habits and our other behaviors are going to be to break it up into steps. But, you know, what is the famous phrase? This is by Abigail Van Buren. A bad habit never disappears by itself. It's an undo-it-yourself project.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely very true to recognize that.
Yeah, no, it's you have to be focused and you have to want it. Like when your cousin doesn't want it, it's never going to happen.
Well, it turned out in his case, too, that it, another area that you get involved with is it turns out we didn't drink water, so he was dehydrated.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't eat anything from the day before, so he now had a sugar problem, but we didn't know that, you know, and... Anyhow, long story short, is there's a few messages involved here. One of them is habits. The other one is stay hydrated and make sure you eat. And if you eat the right food.
What happened to his corned beef sandwich?
You know,
did you take it?
Story by itself. I'm going back to that place. I won't name
New
the name
York
of the place, but it's right near Madison Square
best.
Garden.
They
were great. These people. I should give them a free promotion, but
good.
The Molly Wee Pub.
Okay.
Right near Madison Square Garden, and the people who ran this place were terrific. They wanted us to take the corned beef sandwiches on the ambulance, which I really didn't want to do, but it was tempting because the sandwiches really are good. And it turned out okay, you know. But the point being that one of the things I know you get involved with, Nicolette, is habits and how people contend with habits. It's just like Project Independence. It's people who, seniors who could get help that don't want help. How do you convince them otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
You know? How do you do that? I mean, that's not an easy task.
Well, again, with some of the more deeper issues or ones that potentially may impact quality of life, it is important to get a counselor involved. And behaviorists are ones that are specifically going to deal with this change, and partner with the person to help identify. But yeah, I guess for today, you know, for those out there listening, we all recognize change is hard. It's impossible without planning. And rather than procrastinate, even with your friend, there's a story underlying. He may not be ready to stop smoking, but there may be some other things underlying that he would be willing to change that would also help him and alleviate some of his doctor's concern. But some of that isn't even possible, and I do recommend as a beginning planning step the use of a journal. Now, some dieters are familiar with journaling as a way to record how well they're doing when they're following a diet, and actually that's not the best use of a journal. It actually promotes you only journaling when you're eating properly, and when you start indulging, you don't even want to deal with
right,
it.
Right, then you let it go for a couple
right,
of days.
Right, and that's unfortunate because when a commercial diet gets a hold of some good research, they generally exploit it for profit, and then the whole thing falls apart. So it's a good place to start for the new year is, you know, you could take out a journal, and for a diet perspective, you could really record everything that you're eating throughout the week. I could also include something like the time of day that you're eating or feelings or exercise. You can add a lot of different things to this journal, and what you're looking to do is look out for patterns. You're looking out to see frequency. You're looking to see what is actually becoming manifest in writing these things down, let's say, for just a two-week period of time.
Just journaling-wise.
Yeah.
Is that, like, in the morning, at night, or during the course of the day, like 10 times a day or once a day? Like,
I think,
before you go to bed, you just say, recap the day?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to do it is to just kind of revisit the journal twice a day.
Okay.
There's a sheet that you could fill out. Maybe midday, you could do a jotting down, because you can remember what you did half of the day, somewhere
right.
around 12 or 1, or even use your phone and then write it down later in the day. And then at the end of the day, fill in the blanks. And what's powerful about that is that it brings that unaware behavior, the habit, into the conscious realm. So you can start looking at, oh, my God, I didn't even realize it. Oh, this and oh. And you're going to be looking for a variety of things. And I guess what I've done is put together the top 5 worst diet habits that I've seen in my practice. And I'm going to say that we all suffer from at least one of them.
Okay.
And you know, how do you deal with it? Is it, it's not really just criticizing it, but it's like, what can we do, you know, that's underlying? I guess number one would be less careful food choices. And that's my nice way of saying
junk.
Yes, not
chocolate
exactly.
Chip cookies.
They're indulgences, they're temptations. But what you're looking at, these are generally mindless choices. You know, you're coming across something, it's like, oh, that looks real good. I'm tempted. Let me eat it. Or you're not even paying attention. Before you know it, you're just inadvertently grabbing the bacon double cheeseburger and fries with cheese melted on top and gravy. I mean, you're just constantly doing it. You're not even paying attention. Some of that could also be from that you don't even have any nutrition knowledge. Although we have made great strides in promoting, you know, the calorie values on lots of foods right now, but there's still a lot of things that are not necessarily labeled.
But calorie values labeled, I believe, people look and see it's 200 or 150 mm-hmm. or 500, but they're not really looking at what that 500.
Correct.
What brought about that 500.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it really is a small step. And I've also heard a good argument that it almost ruins it. You know, you really wanted to have that indulgence. You see it's like 650 calories and you're like, and you skip
True.
It. And
yeah,
you
right,
should have
okay.
had it and moved on. So there's a lot of ways of looking at it. But bottom line is that, you know, getting some knowledge on what those are is going to be helpful. And again, bringing some of that mindless into the you know, conscious realm is good.
Don't a lot of people have that knowledge, though, and they still do it anyhow? You know?
Right.
I mean, we're all guilty of
absolutely. And I think what it, in terms of a diet habit, of this being repetitive, we're not talking about the occasional controlled indulgence or a temptation or as part of anything. We're talking about repetitive, and again, the journal will point that out. It's like a daily diet of nothing but less careful food choices, the outcome is going to be pretty severe. This is an easy one, but there's always something behind it. And here's an example of something that could be very well behind the less careful food choices is meal skipping and irregular meals. This is a major, major factor. I see this practically universally in everyone, and it's representative of our lifestyle. Eating patterns have not integrated into our lifestyle, our priorities, or our demands. Years ago, pretty much the United States, the meals were scheduled at exact intervals. And, you know, in the U.S., everybody ate at 7 a.m., everybody ate at 12 noon, and everybody ate dinner at 6 o'clock.
Right.
And I know for a fact, because as I was putting myself through college, I was a phone solicitor, and I'd unfortunately get that evening shift, and I'd get a lot of yelling people, how dare you call during dinner hour?
And they still do.
They still do, but yeah. Now the dinner
Less,
hour can be anywhere. In fact, it's anywhere from, you know, 5 o'clock till midnight I have dinner hours. So it's a real disaster, and it's impacting how the body responds with its appetite and its control on hunger. So I find it's really at least 3/4 of the problem.
Is there a, because I've heard different things, a number of times a person should eat a day, like 2, 5, 9, you know, whatever?
It depends. I'm going to say it depends on the waking state, and it's going to depend on how, you know, active you are or sedentary. But for a fact, we know how long it takes to digest and absorb food, and the body does need to be unfed for periods of time.
How long does it take?
Well, in the stomach, if it's a mixed meal of reasonable quantity, it should take about 2 to 4 hours. It'll be in your gut for another 4 to 6. Reasonable interval to eat would be somewhere in the nature of 4 to 6 hours. And technically, that almost corresponds with the old dieting meal times of, you know, 8 a.m. and 12 noon and 6 o'clock. You know, that's something to think about.
A lot of people, I hear that breakfast should be the most important meal. Because you didn't eat, in theory, if you go by the normal clock, you didn't eat since like 7 o'clock last night, and now it's 8 o'clock in the morning, and you still haven't eaten. So there's 13 hours between those two.
Yeah,
I have children and grandchildren mm-hmm. that do not eat breakfast.
Right.
You know, they'll have some of them even have a soda, you know, mm-hmm. as opposed to coffee or tea or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And, I can't make my children or grandchildren do anything, basically.
Right.
Especially that.
It's true. But like you said, in theory, it's absolutely true. Technically, it's breaking the fast. But many people are eating just right before bed. So there is no fast there at all, which is nighttime eating. Another very, very popular nasty diet habit. So this could be due to why is they eating so late at night? They're waking up in the morning with absolutely zero appetite. You know, it's for fatigue. You have missed your daytime meals. You're bored. You need some comfort. You really don't have a lack of you have a lack of recreational rewards. So it's kind of hard to do anything else but just saddle up with some food at the end of the day, watch a nice program.
Right.
That's it. So in terms of the first meal of the day, I'd like to do a better parameter guide for people who are listening. And I would say within 3, maximum 4 hours after you're awake, you should be taking some type of nourishment. This will be a little bit easier on people. The idea is to stabilize your hunger before it builds up to be a monster.
So if you don't eat breakfast like right away, at least eat something between 3 to 4 hours after you've
Within three. This way you can help protect yourself.
Okay, well, Nicolette, we're going to have to take a break. And because I want to follow up with a question for the first meal of the day.
Okay.
When we come back, we're talking to Nicolette Pace. We'll be right back.